Son, said my mother, when I was knee-high, you've need of clothes to cover you, and not a rag have I. There's nothing in the house to make a boy of breeches, nor shears to cut a cloth with, nor thread to take stitches. There's nothing in the house but a loaf end of rye.
You are listening to the voice of Edna St. Vincent Millay, reading The Ballad of the Harp Weaver, a page from this afternoon's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Every Sunday afternoon at this time, WNBC, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests today, by transcription, Edna St. Vincent Millay and Deems Taylor.
Of October 19th, 1950, as on so many nights, she sat in the living room at Steepletop at work. Sometime during the night, she must have called it a day, so to speak, and started up to bed. Late the following afternoon, the farmer noticed that the lights were still on in the main house. He made his way in and found her body huddled at the foot of the stairs. The task that her husband had laid upon her was nearing completion. The end, if not yet reached, was at least in sight. It was almost as if she had hurried to tell him so.
This was Deems Taylor's account of the death of Edna St. Vincent Millay on our program several weeks ago. Her passing was a great personal loss, not only to her friends, but to the many, many thousands of men and women who love and admire her work. One such person is Mrs. Emily Hansen Auber, a schoolteacher at Walton High School in New York. Faced with the problem of explaining the death of the poetess to her English class, Mrs. Auber wrote a poem in memory of Edna Millay, which has since been published in the September issue of the English Journal. Before we listen to a recording of Miss Millay reading some of her best-known and best-loved poems, we'd like you to hear Mrs. Auber's beautiful and touching tribute to the poetess, which she calls To Edna Millay. The day I told my class that you had died, they thought such stark news surely must be wrong. Why should death still a voice so clear and strong? Patricia's face was stricken as she cried, "But it says here, this book, it can't have lied. I wonder if it's like the dream her song of death reveals, a vision of the long-awaited birth the rain had purified. I told them of your girlhood days in Maine, your islands set in blue Penobscot Bay, of college, where you wrote of youth's ideal in symbols of three mountains, seen in vain unless we can discern the steadfast way they stand for heights that are forever real. For you, Patricia, here is the poetess reading one of her early works, a tender and loving poem published in 1923, and in which many of her admirers see an imaginative or transposed tribute to her mother. Edna St. Vincent Millay reads The Ballad of the Harp Weaver.
Thank you.
son, said my mother, when I was knee-high, you've need of clothes to cover you, and not a rag have I. There's nothing in the house to make a boy breeches, nor shears to cut a cloth with, nor thread to take stitches. There's nothing in the house but a loaf end of rye, and a harp with a woman's head nobody will buy. And she began to cry. That was in the early fall. When came the late fall? Son, she said, the sight of you makes your mother's blood crawl. Little skinny shoulder blades sticking through your clothes. And where you'll get a jacket from, God above knows. It's lucky for me, lad, your daddy's in the ground and can't see the way I let his son go around. And she made a queer sound. That was in the late fall. When the winter came, I'd not a pair of breeches nor a shirt to my name. I couldn't go to school or out of doors to play. And all the other little boys passed our way. Son, said my mother, come climb into my lap, and I'll chafe your little bones while you take a nap. And oh, but we were silly for half an hour or more. Me with my long legs dragging on the floor. A rock, rock, rocking to a mother goose rhyme. Oh, but we were happy for half an hour's time. But there was I, a great boy. And what would folks say to hear my mother singing me to sleep all day in such a daft way? Men say the winter was bad that year. Fuel was scarce and food was dear. A wind with a wolf's head howled about our door, and we burned up the chairs and sat upon the floor. All that was left us was a chair we couldn't break, and the harp with a woman's head nobody would take for song or pity's sake. The night before Christmas, I cried with the cold. I cried myself to sleep like a two-year-old. And in the deep night, I felt my mother rise and stare down upon me with love in her eyes. I saw my mother sitting on the one good chair, a light falling on her from I couldn't tell where, looking 19 and not a day older, and the harp with a woman's head leaned against her shoulder. Her thin fingers moving in the thin, tall strings were weave, weave, weaving wonderful things. Many bright threads from where I couldn't see were running through the harp strings rapidly, and gold threads whistling through my mother's hand. I saw the web grow and the pattern expand. She wove a child's jacket, and when it was done, she laid it on the floor and wove another one. She wove a red cloak, so regal to see. She's made it for a king's son, I said, and not for me. But I knew it was for me. She wove a pair of breeches quicker than that. She wove a pair of boots and a little cocked hat. She wove a pair of mittens. She wove a little blouse. She wove all night in the still, cold house. She sang as she worked, and the harp strings spoke. Her voice never faltered, and the thread never broke. And when I awoke, there sat my mother with the harp against her shoulder, looking 19 and not a day older, a smile about her lips and a light about her head, and her hands in the harp strings frozen dead. And piled up beside her and toppling to the skies were the clothes of a king's son, just my size.
The record we are hearing of Miss Millay reading her poems was made in 1941 by RCA Victor, and just this month has been re-released as an LP album. On the reverse side is Alice Duer Miller's The White Cliffs of Dover, about which many of you have inquired. As a short side note on inquiries, and for the benefit of our newly acquired network listeners, the anthology theme is a portion of Richard Rodgers' brilliant score for the award-winning NBC film production, Victory at Sea. Returning to the Edna St. Vincent Millay album, here is the poetess reading two sonnets from her book, Fatal Interview. We hear Love Is Not All and Sorrowful Dreams.
Love is not all. It is not meat, nor drink, nor slumber, nor a roof against the rain, nor yet a floating spar to men that sink and rise and sink and rise and sink again. Love cannot fill the thickened lung with breath, nor clean the blood, nor set the fractured bone. Yet many a man is making friends with death, even as I speak, for lack of love alone. It well may be that in a difficult hour, pinned down by pain and moaning for release, or nagged by want past resolution's power, I might be driven to sell your love for peace, or trade the memory of this night for food. It well may be. I do not think I would. Sorrowful dreams remembered after waking, shadow with dolor all the candid day. Even as I read, the silly tears outbreaking splash on my hands and shut the page away. Grief at the root, a dark and secret dolor, harder to bear than wind and weather grief. Clutching the rose, draining its cheek of color, drying the bud, curling the opened leaf. Deep is the pond, although the edge be shallow, frank in the sun, revealing fish and stone, climbing ashore to turtle head and mallow. Black at the center beats a heart unknown. Desolate dreams pursue me out of sleep. Weeping I wake, waking I weep, I weep.
At the age of 19, Edna Millay wrote an extraordinary poem of more than 200 lines, for which she'll always be remembered. A poem which opens with an almost childlike simplicity. Then, line by line, stanza by stanza, reaches a high climax of exaltation. Here is Edna St. Vincent Millay reading Renaissance.
All I could see from where I stood was three long mountains and a wood. I turned and looked another way and saw three islands in a bay. So with my eyes I traced the line of the horizon, thin and fine, straight around till I was come back to where I'd started from. And all I saw from where I stood was three long mountains and a wood. Over these things I could not see. These were the things that bounded me. And I could touch them with my hand, almost, I thought, from where I stand. And all at once, things seemed so small, my breath came short and scarce at all. But sure, the sky is big, I said, miles and miles above my head. So here upon my back I lie and look my fill into the sky. And so I looked, and after all, the sky was not so very tall. The sky, I said, must somewhere stop. And sure enough, I see the top. The sky, I thought, is not so grand. I most could touch it with my hand. And reaching up my hand to try, I screamed to feel it touch the sky. I screamed, and lo, infinity came down and settled over me.
forced back my scream into my chest, bent back my arm upon my breast, and pressing of the undefined, the definition on my mind, held up before my eyes a glass through which my shrinking sight did pass, until it seemed I must behold immensity made manifold. Whispered to me a word whose sound deafened the air for worlds around, and brought unmuffled to my ears the gossiping of friendly spheres, the creaking of the tented sky, the ticking of eternity. I saw and heard and knew at last the how and why of all things, past and present and forevermore. The universe, cleft to the core, lay open to my probing sense, that sickening I would fain pluck thence, but could not, nay, but needs must suck at the great wound, and could not pluck my lips away till I had drawn all venom out. Ah, fearful pawn, for my omniscience paid I toll in infinite remorse of soul. All sin was of my sinning, all atoning mine, and mine the gall of all regret. Mine was the weight of every brooded wrong, the hate that stood behind each envious thrust. Mine every greed, mine every lust. And all the while, for every grief, each suffering, I craved relief with individual desire, craved all in vain, and felt fierce fire about a thousand people crawl, perished with each, then mourned for all. A man was starving in Capri. He moved his eyes and looked at me. I felt his gaze, I heard his moan, and knew his hunger as my own. I saw at sea a great fog bank between two ships that struck and sank. A thousand screams the heavens smote, and every scream tore through my throat. No hurt I did not feel, no death that was not mine. Mine each last breath that, crying, met an answering cry from the compassion that was I. All suffering mine, and mine its rod, mine pity like the pity of God. Ah, awful weight, infinity pressed down upon the finite me. My anguished spirit, like a bird beating against my lips, I heard. Yet lay the weight so close about, there was no room for it without. And so beneath the weight lay I, and suffered death, but could not die. Long had I lain thus, craving death, when quietly the earth beneath gave way, and inch by inch, so great at last had grown the crushing weight, into the earth I sank, till I full 6 feet underground did lie, and sank no more. There is no weight can follow here, however great. From off my breast I felt it roll, and as it went, my tortured soul burst forth and fled in such a gust that all about me swirled the dust. deep in the earth, I rested now. Cool is its hand upon the brow, and soft its breast beneath the head of one who is so gladly dead. And all at once, and over all, the pitying rain began to fall. I lay and heard each pattering hoof upon my lowly thatched roof, and seemed to love the sound far more than ever I had done before. For rain, it hath a friendly sound to one who's 6 feet underground, and scarce the friendly voice or face. A grave is such a quiet place. The rain, I said, is kind to come and speak to me in my new home. I would I were alive again to kiss the fingers of the rain, to drink into my eyes the shine of every slanting silver line, to catch the freshened, fragrant breeze from drenched and dripping apple trees. For soon the shower will be done, and then the broad face of the sun will laugh above the rain-soaked earth until the world with answering mirth shakes joyously, and each round drop rolls twinkling from its grass-blade top. How can I bear it, buried here, while overhead the sky grows clear and blue again after the storm? Oh, multicolored, multiform, beloved beauty over me, that I shall never, never see again. Spring silver, autumn gold, that I shall never more behold. Sleeping your myriad magics through, close, sepulchred, away from you. Oh God, I cried, give me new birth and put me back upon the earth. Upset each cloud's gigantic gourd and let the heavy rain, downpoured in one big torrent, set me free, washing my grave away from me. I ceased, and through the breathless hush that answered me, the far-off rush of herald wings came whispering like music down the vibrant string of my ascending prayer, and crash, before the wild wind's whistling lash, the startled storm clouds reared on high and plunged in terror down the sky, and the big rain in one black wave fell from the sky and struck my grave. I know not how such things can be. I only know there came to me a fragrance such as never clings to aught save happy living things. A sound as of some joyous elf singing sweet songs to please himself, and through and over everything a sense of glad awakening. The grass a tiptoe at my ear, whispering to me, I could hear. I felt the rain's cool fingertips brushed tenderly across my lips, laid gently on my sealed sight. And all at once the heavy night fell from my eyes, and I could see a drenched and dripping apple tree, a last long line of silver rain, a sky grown clear and blue again. And as I looked, a quickening gust of wind blew up to me and thrust into my face a miracle of orchard breath. And with the smell, I know not how such things can be, I breathed my soul back into me. Ah, Up then from the ground sprang I, and hailed the earth with such a cry as is not heard save from a man who has been dead and lives again. About the trees my arms I wound, like one gone mad I hugged the ground. I raised my quivering arms on high. I laughed and laughed into the sky, till at my throat a strangling sob caught fiercely, and a great heartthrob sent instant tears into my eyes. Oh, God, I cried, no dark disguise can e'er hereafter hide from me thy radiant identity. Thou canst not move across the grass, but my quick eyes will see thee pass, nor speak, however silently, but my hushed voice will answer thee. I know the path that tells thy way through the cool eve of every day. God, I can push the grass apart and lay my finger on thy heart. The world stands out on either side, no wider than the heart is wide. Above the world is stretched the sky, no higher than the soul is high. The heart can push the sea and land farther away on either hand. The soul can split the sky in two and let the face of God shine through. But east and west will pinch the heart that cannot keep them pushed apart. And he whose soul is flat, the sky will cave in on him by and by.
We would like to close today's Edna St. Vincent Millay program with a second poem written in tribute to the poetess by Mrs. Auber. This is called Corollary. Euclid is not alone with beauty now. Edna Millay has found its essence, where eternal music charges listening air with echoes from each mountain's luminous brow. In youth, she heard the harpist of the sea beneath the granite face of cliff and hill, the silver timbrel of the whippoorwill in Maine's sweet fern, islands of melody. When beauty's ringing sandal touches stone, lighting the upland with a lilac cloud, the marriage of sound and vision is begun. Not Euclid nor the harp weaver fares alone. The desolate hearth, whose ashes were a shroud, vibrates with voices of a benison. So, Anthology, number 32, dated Sunday, October 17th. Next week, a second group of poems written and read for you by Carl Sandburg. And by way of contrast, a very interesting treatment of verses from the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, narrated by Jim Amici, with incidental music composed by Harold Spina. Anthology is brought to you in conjunction with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA Poetry Center, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. John Malcolm Brennan, director. The program is produced by Steve White, written and directed for WNBC by Draper Lewis. Until next Sunday afternoon at 1:30, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.